You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Finally, just on the practicalities of this, if you tell any one of those juries that this fancy-sounding International Association on the Research of Cancer found a hazard warning for glyphosate, that sounds pretty bad. But every agency around the globe, New Zealand, Japan, Australia, the European Union, Canada, they've all looked at glyphosate. It's probably the most studied herbicide in the history of man. And they've all reached the conclusion based on more data and the kind of expert analysis they can do that there isn't a risk here. You shouldn't let a single Missouri jury second guess that judgment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. The case is submitted.
Attorney Paul Clement representing Monsanto before the Supreme Court. Challenge on glyphosate. The Supreme Court expected to rule on that later this year. Florida imposing new import restrictions on warm-blooded animals from six South Texas counties due to a growing New World screwworm threat near the U.S.-Mexican border. Move adds yet another layer of pressure as livestock producers already deal with tighter cattle movement and broader biosecurity issues. Now, Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller said Florida's action, understandable, reflects how serious the threat has become. Florida officials said New World screwworm can infect livestock, pets, wildlife, and in rare cases, people, usually through open wounds. USDA's latest export inspection showing a mixed week for grain movement, with corn, soybeans, and wheat all moving lower than the previous week, while sorghum remains sharply above year-ago levels. Report also offers another snapshot of how demand is lining up late in the marketing year. Corn inspections for the week, 64.7 million bushels, down from the previous week and just below the 65.6 million bushels inspected 1 year ago. Soybean inspections, 23.1 million bushels, down from the previous week, but still well above where we were 1 year ago. Wheat inspections, 13.4 million bushels, down from 19 million the week before and still below the four-week average. But sorghum inspections, 7.1 million bushels, though lower than the previous week, far above the 900,000 bushels during the same week last year. And data center growth accelerating in rural America. It's bringing new tax revenue and infrastructure investment, while also putting more pressure on farmland, water, and electricity. For ag, the issue not just development. Question is whether rural communities can add digital infrastructure without undercutting long-term farm and ranch productivity. American Farm Bureau Federation says thousands of data centers now active or under construction across the country. Group says those projects are increasingly moving into rural areas because land is available, transmission access is stronger, and local zoning can be more flexible. And Liz Schwab is Google Data Center Development Lead.
For decades, the U.S. has underinvested in the grid because we had basically, flat electricity load growth. But of course, in recent years, that has completely changed. So we need to invest in our grid, and data centers are helping to accelerate that.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Farm Food and National Security Act of 2026 is years in the making.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson, before the House Rules Committee.
Producers have operated under an extension of 2018 policy since 2023. That cannot continue. Producers are currently facing some of the toughest times in the farm economy since the 1980s farm crisis. And the simple fact is that the 2018 policies are no match for 2026 challenges. This bill is unique because it wasn't written in Washington. It was written out in the fields and the pastures of our great nation. We visited 43 states and one territory, holding over 150 listening farm bill listening sessions. This is in addition to the countless hearings and meetings we held with producers here in Washington. Through these efforts, we heard a lot of different needs, but everyone agreed on one thing. Congress needed to get to work and pass a new farm bill. As of today, over 500 stakeholder organizations have expressed public support for the Farm, Food, and National Security Act of 2026. I'd like to say that again. Over 500 organizations support this bill because they see the benefits to America's farm families and ranch families. That number alone shows how worthy this bill is of our time. Stakeholders across the country and throughout the entire agriculture supply chain support the 2026 Farm Bill, and they are counting on us to bring it home. The Farm, Food, and National Security Act of 2026 is also a bipartisan bill, and that is by design. We're not playing political games with the future of rural America. We're focused on policy that threads the needle of responsible spending and meaningful impact back home. Today, we hear some comments against the bill, perhaps from my ranking member, and I respect her views and her right to express them.
Ranking member of the House Ag Committee from Minnesota, Angie Craig.
Now, my chairman, who I dearly respect, says that this was a bipartisan farm bill. Sure, it got a few Democrats on it, but Republicans took about 10% of our bipartisan ideas and included it in the farm bill that we are discussing today. USDA says that more than 3 million Americans have already been kicked off food assistance thanks to the $187 billion in cuts that this farm bill locks in. And now we're hearing reports that the majority may be coming back for more SNAP cuts in a future reconciliation bill. Are you kidding me? That's anything but a bipartisan process. And let me repeat, because I've been here long enough to know that these cycles change, let me repeat that this is a very dangerous precedent. To make matters worse, this bill sides with multi-billion dollar pesticide companies over our neighbors by barring local and state governments from setting health and safety standards for certain products and depriving people hurt by pesticides the right to have their day in court. It cuts the nation's most popular farm conservation program, EQIP, by $1 billion. It preempts Prop 12, which set food quality and animal welfare standards in California, and will have far-reaching consequences and roll back hundreds of state laws across the country, red and blue alike.
But Thompson countered.
However, opposition from my ranking member does not change the fact that this is a bipartisan farm bill. 7 Democrats on the Agriculture Committee voted for this bill last month after a markup that lasted over 22 hours and included debate on over 100 amendments. Adopted amendments included markups were evenly split between Republicans and Democrats. And when you consider that almost 200 marker bills that were incorporated into the base text of the farm bill, 82% of those bills had bipartisan co-sponsors. But these are the facts, and loud opposition from a select few does not change them.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The biggest surprise in the 2025 grape crush report wasn't how small the crush was, but rather how large it was relative to expectations.
Chris Bitter is a senior wine and grape analyst with Terrain.
Market observers were generally expecting the crush to be in the range of 2 million to 2.4 million tons. The larger final tally suggests that yields, while still low, were somewhat more generous than initially thought, and perhaps more unsold fruit was crushed by growers than initially projected. The larger-than-expected crush, coupled with deteriorating California wine sales, means wine inventory likely won't see as much of a reduction as I had previously expected. After incorporating the actual crush total in an updated production for California wine shipments into my inventory model, I'm expecting only a modest drawdown in California winery inventory of around 20 million cases between mid-year 2025 and mid-year 2026. If the crush had come in at 2 million tons, the drawdown would have been 65 million cases. Because wine sales are still deteriorating, I'm not expecting any improvement in the inventory-to-sales ratio under my base case scenario. Based on my projection that around 200 million cases of California wine will be sold between July 2025 and June 2026, I expect there to be about 18 months supply at the end of June 2026, the same as where we were heading into the 2025 harvest. I believe a supply of approximately 14 months would represent a balanced inventory position. So unless there is a turnaround in wine sales or a substantial quantity of inventory is transitioned to non-wine uses, we are likely to still be very long in inventory heading into the 2026 harvest. And wineries will likely continue to be very conservative with their grape purchases as they work through carryover inventory. Thus, demand for grapes isn't likely to improve in 2026. Approximately 2.9 to 3 million tons of grapes would be required to replenish the wine sold in 2025, but because of the inventory glut and declining wine sales, far fewer grapes will be needed. There's a possibility that the amount of fruit sold in 2026 will be lower than in 2025. Thus, growers with unsold fruit shouldn't count too heavily on a buyer materializing before harvest time. The 2025 crush report indicates that more white grapes were crushed in California than red for the first time since 1996. Though the margin was slim at 10,000 tons. White varieties represented just 44% of the crush as recently as 2022. This doesn't imply that demand for white grapes has been strong. The white grape crush was down 6% year over year and 15% below the five-year average, and a large quantity of white grapes went unpicked in 2025, and prices fell in 12 of 17 districts in 2025, implying there was more supply than demand. The greater resilience of demand for white grape varieties mirrors stronger consumer demand for white wines. White wine sales have been declining, but at a slower rate than red wine sales. I expect this trend to continue. Nonetheless, I advise caution in replanting to white grapes without a contract in hand. This is particularly true for Sauvignon Blanc, which has seen heavy plantings in recent years. At 161,000 tons, the Sauvignon Blanc harvest reached an all-time high in 2025. It was up 16% year-over-year and 17% above the five-year average. The crush was particularly heavy in the North Coast, 32% above the five-year average, though it was also above average in the Central Coast and Northern Interior. However, Sauvignon Blanc prices fell in all major districts that produced this variety in 2025. While demand for Sauvignon Blancs has held up better, the surge in planting increasingly looks to be overdone. Although consumers have been gravitating towards Sauvignon Blanc and it has been a top performer in the retail wine market in recent years, sales volume was flat in 2025, according to NIQ data. Moreover, bulk Sauvignon Blanc inventory has surged over the past year and now stands at an all-time high, according to Turrentine Brokerage. More Sauvignon Blanc plantings will begin to bear in the next several years, so the excess is likely to grow going forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We'll hear argument next in case 24-1068, Monsanto Company versus Darnell.
At the Supreme Court on Monday, attorney Paul Clement, counsel of record for Monsanto.
Respondents' label-based failure to warn claim is preempted twice over. First, it is preempted by the express terms of FIFRA's express preemption clause, which forecloses state labeling claims that are in addition to or different from those imposed under FIFRA. Here, a Missouri jury imposed a cancer warning requirement that the EPA does not require. That additional requirement is preempted. Now, respondent concedes, as he must, that the state tort law is a labeling requirement for purposes of preemption clause. Bates held as much. Nonetheless, he insists that unless Congress expressly directs the agency to bind the judiciary, then the requirements that are imposed on a particular pesticide in the registration process and backed by criminal penalties are not federal requirements. That defies common sense, the statutory text, and this court's precedents. In particular, this court's 8-1 decision in Regal, where this court held that similar agency-imposed requirements on a particular device are federal requirements for preemption purposes. The same result follows from principles of impossibility preemption. The EPA regulation and the government's brief here makes crystal clear that a registrant cannot change the safety warnings on a pesticide label without approval of the agency. Thus, Missouri law here requires something that not only is not required by federal law, but that federal law doesn't even allow. Either way you come to it, either via express preemption or impossibility preemption, the result here is clear. Congress plainly wanted uniformity when it came to the safety warnings on a pesticide's label. Ignoring Congress's clear direction here would open the door for crippling liability and undermine the interests of farmers who depend on federally registered pesticides for their livelihood.
On the other side, attorney Ashley Keller.
You unanimously held in Bates that a pesticide can be registered and nevertheless misbranded, even if it uses the label that EPA approved at registration. Yet Monsanto now asks you for the opposite holding, that Roundup cannot be misbranded as a matter of law because EPA found for the first time 50 years ago as a matter of fact that it is safe based on information Monsanto submitted. After two briefs and a lot of podium time, Monsanto still hasn't pointed to one word in FIFRA's text that says the agency's factual findings at registration create a requirement for labeling. That's because the text repudiates that proposition in no uncertain terms. 136AF2 is an anti-delegation clause. It says that the agency's findings at registration are nothing more than prima facie evidence of compliance with the labeling requirements. Prima facie evidence is not a law of the United States made in pursuance of the Constitution. It is a thumb on the evidentiary scales that can be rebutted, and a reasonable jury has rejected that evidence. With no satisfactory response to 136AF2, Monsanto changes the subject, making the totally uncontested point that the express preemption clause talks about requirements under FIFRA. We agree. We're good textualists. We don't ignore prepositions. And we agree there are affirmative delegations of authority to the administrator to issue regulations that create labeling requirements. Monsanto's problem is they're not relying on any of those regulations. They're relying on registration and registration alone. There is nothing in, by, under, or next to FIFRA that makes the registration decisions that EPA makes binding labeling requirements with preemptive force.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Let me start with a simple question. Do you believe that glyphosate is safe?
Ranking member of the House Rules Committee, Jim McGovern, questioning the chairman of the House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson.
My opinion is not important. What is opinion is the opinion of the scientists. This is an issue that has come down between emotion
and
science. So I point to the EPA. Which have found glyphosate is probably the most studied agriculture tool in the country, if not the world. And the United States is not the only one that has found it to be safe. As long as it is administered and cleaned up according to the instructions that come with the chemical. But that could be said for anything, because anything could be hazardous if you don't use it properly. Yeah. But there are many European states, nations that have also found it to be safe.
Well, there are a lot of organizations and a lot of reputable scientific organizations that have a very different opinion. And I find it curious that you would cite the EPA, since I recall you going after the EPA on 1,000 different things during my time on the Agriculture Committee. But I guess the issue is you do believe it is safe, right?
I do believe it's safe if it is utilized properly according to how it's labeled. The provision in the Farm Bill is a labeling provision.
Right. So if glyphosate is so safe, why does the Farm Bill that you wrote create a liability shield for the companies that manufacture it? Why would those companies need a liability shield if glyphosate is so safe?
Well, this bill does not, Mr. Governor, I worked with you a long time, so I know you've read the bill. I know you did, and I trust you on this. But I have to say that I encourage you to go back and take another look at it, because the bill does not shield companies from being held liable if they harm users. The current failure to warn claims that are being brought forward are based on products not having warning labels, which are not allowed by the EPA. If it's the EPA is approving these tools, they have to have warning labels. And it's clear that these claims should never have been applicable to these products that have met the EPA regulatory standards. The language to address this issue ensures that companies can still be held liable if they lie or hide information to receive their EPA-approved label. And all other lawsuits, like those related to fraud or negligence, are not impacted by the language. I'll be honest with you. If you've got a bad actor that's lying in terms of the language that they put forward for the labeling purposes, and it harms people, they need to be sued.
And they will be with this. And I strongly disagree with the way you just characterized it.
Well, I don't think there should be a liability shield, and then you went on a tantrum that somehow I do think that there should be a liability shield. I will also say that the language that we have basically addresses what our farmers need. This really is about health. The EPA doing the labeling, they have hundreds of scientists that work diligently to make sure that things are not only safe, but to determine what should be on the label in terms of preparation, application, and cleanup.
What states can do if this were to become law. So the states that felt that there was greater danger, they're going to be limited. They're going to be prevented from advising their farmers.
Now, states have the ability not to register with our language. States have the ability to refuse to register any particular agriculture.
Clearly, Monsanto and these big companies want this desperately. I mean, do you have any?
Our farmers want it more than what they do.
Not the farmers. I mean, this is a giveaway to a corporate special interest.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What we do expect is still a lot of milk around the world in the first half of the year.
William Lau is Senior Vice President, Global Economic Affairs, U.S. Dairy Export Council.
I think where we're watching is what happens basically in the second half of the year. And I think our expectation is with particularly the beef returns and the fact that we've got good component growth, the U.S. is going to be the last to blink. I think the question is how much does European milk production slow, particularly with tighter margins? And I think that's going to have a big impact on what the second half of the year looks like. I think the first half is plenty of milk. Second half of the year, hopefully we go to a more balanced market outlook. So the other question, though, here is sort of demand as we start transitioning to this side. But I'd argue, in many ways, China is as much a supply story as it is a demand story. The massive expansion that you've seen in China's domestic dairy herd has really transformed global dairy markets. If you look at the chart on the left, basically global dairy trade to China over the last decade, you could certainly see the last couple booming price cycles that we saw in 2013-14 and then in 2021 into 22 when China was buying a substantial amount of dairy products. China was, for the previous decade, the engine of global dairy import growth. They accounted for about 40% of the incremental increase in dairy imports over that time frame. Since then, they've effectively gone backwards after 2023, and right now are sort of holding at roughly a static level right now. They are still importing products. I don't want to say that. Their demand is increasing, particularly for fats. Their imports of cream from New Zealand are up. Their imports of butter are up. Their imports of cheese are still growing. High proteins took a step back last year, but largely are still on a positive trajectory. What they are making far less of, or what they are importing far less of, because they're effectively making it themselves, are things like whole milk powder and skim milk powder. They are increasingly utilizing that milk domestically to fill those channels within China. We've touched on this before. I think the question that we have here is not necessarily whether a structural change is undergoing within China, that they will import less of those products over the long term. I think we all agree on that, that that is a structural shift. One interesting thing that we've seen change this past year has been the stabilization of the Chinese milk price of late, and actually a small increase in it, even during the flush. What we've seen, I think, in China to a certain extent, and I asked this question last year, is do economics matter in China? The answer is largely no, but it gets a little bit delayed, and at a certain point it does start to matter. But what we've seen instead has been a rapid rise in China's exports of whole milk powder as well as skim milk powder here over the last year or so. And so what we've seen here has really been a rapid rise in their exports, particularly to Southeast Asia, some to North Korea, some to Bangladesh, some to whoever would buy it. But really, this has been where a lot of Chinese milk is going. I'm taking the under on this. We have the over-under at plus 10%. I think the signals are there, some of the leading indicators are there, that milk is, I would not say tight within China, but it's not going to the whole milk powder dryers that I think we saw in the past couple of years. I think it's being prioritized into a lot of their new butter and skim plants that are going on there using condensed skim as well as also the creams and everything else where that's really demanded within China. So I think they could be up 10% on their skim milk powder exports if they're making that, but I think they're going to be down on whole milk powder just because they are not flooded with the same amount of milk that they had previously.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.